is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 242 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with Franklin's police sergeant, Brian Johnson. Sergeant Johnson is the public information officer for the police department. We had a great conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. Now, you may ask, can you have a conversation with the Franklin Police Department and not discuss their four-legged star? Listen and hear how we had plenty to talk about, how the police department is responding during this pandemic, how some personnel assignments have been juggled, how they can find time to help celebrate a birthday or two, and then the call to action to check on our neighbors and to see how they are faring in this period. The recording runs around 28 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Sergeant Johnson and hear about what's happening on the front lines with the Franklin Police Department. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, here with Sergeant Brian Johnson. Brian, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Happy to do it, Steve. How are you?
We're doing well under the circumstances. No, we're in the middle of this pandemic. We're kind of hunkered down. We're behaving social distance via this conference call today. So we're reinforcing that.
Absolutely. That's the right thing to do.
It is. And to the extent that clearly you and your folks are on the front line, I wanted to talk with you to help share that information with the community. But since it's our first opportunity, maybe some people will recognize the name, maybe they won't. But can you tell us a little bit about your background for the police here in Franklin?
Sure. I've actually, it'll be 27 years I've worked for the town come August. I started as a dispatcher in the early 90s. I dispatched for a long time. Then I was a patrol officer, went to the academy, did that. Was on the road for a while, promoted to supervisor, stayed on the road. And now I'm in a administrative support role for the police department. Cool. I serve as the administrative sergeant. So I'm tasked with a lot of different things. Some of it's, bookkeeping, some of it's records. One of my, main functions is I'm the public information officer, the PIO.
Sure.
So when, journalists like yourself have questions or need answers or just querying something, I try to be as helpful as I can.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And congratulations on 27 years. That's certainly an accomplishment. And maybe you don't want that many more, but certainly a successful continuation in your journey.
I do have a date in mind when this will come to a close. And I keep that near and dear to my heart.
Oh, good. My date came last September and I've been enjoying every minute. Clearly, I did not think I'd be spending my time remotely as much as I am now, having left a remote work position. I figured I'd have time during the day to get out and meet people under these circumstances. No, not right away.
It's a difficult thing to do right now, but we're happy that the residents of the community are heeding the warnings to do the social distancing and stay away from each other and stay out of the parks. We're happy with the response the communities have. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, by nature, we're social creatures.
We are.
We need to interact. It affects, all of our senses, and emotionals, emotions is definitely one of them. I mean, I don't like to be separated from people. I'm a talker. I like to, meet people and be out in the community and doing things. And this, current situation is making that much more difficult. And it adds a lot of stress to a lot of people.
Yes.
And that's something that, as a police department, we have to be aware of that, there's always this X factor that's going on. There's what we see that we've been called to or, asked to respond to, but we don't know the history. We don't know what else is going on behind the scenes with the
right
people that we're involved with. They could be under a lot of stress. They could have a spouse that's now home all the time or is out of work or things
sure
like that. And it's just a little empathy goes a long way right now. And that's something that I think that the officers that are out there on the street are doing a really, really great job with.
I'm glad you're seeing at least kind of the good behavior in my walks around. And I've been walking frequently, being mindful of the social distance, of course. But to get my exercise and help my kind of head get set properly as we deal with these challenging times, I've been observant at least that, for the most part, people are indeed
adhering to the social distancing. I'm assuming when I see couples together, they truly are couples, and thereby that's okay. When I see groups of kids, and they are, at least whether they're on their bikes or running or chasing after each other, they seem to be at least keeping some space appropriately. So that's pretty good.
That's the hardest group to kind of work with, because, you know, kids want to hang out together. I mean, this is a unique situation. They've never been like this. You know, it's not summer vacation. It's not really vacation from school. So what is it? You know, and, you know, from everything that we're reading and hearing about this virus, you know, it affects older people and those with, you know, compromised systems more, mm-hmm. you know, than it does the younger kids. But it's hard for them to recognize the fact that them all being together, hanging out, you know, while it may not have a huge impact on them, it may have a major impact on a loved one that they live with or they come in contact with.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a hard thing to explain to teenagers and kids that are even a little bit younger. It's a hard thing for adults to understand.
Yeah. Yeah. This thing that you're meeting and having friends with, et cetera. And then all of a sudden there's this mysterious thing that we can't really see. Potentially then would get carried back by that individual into their family. And a lot of them live with multiple generations, so they could be exposing others and others that potentially would be even more at risk.
And exactly. That's the
hard part.
And it's hard to get that message across to people sometimes that, you know, it's the people that are asymptomatic. You know, yes. No, I feel fine, or I never came down with it, but there's still so much we don't know, you know, right. That, you know, we have to rely on, you know, organizations like the CDC and the boards of health, and that they're the experts in this. I'm certainly not the expert in this. I'll never claim to be, nope. You know, I'm going to follow their guidance because I believe that they are looking out for us.
Yes. Yeah. And my professional background, I was in risk and IT security. So from a risk perspective, I totally agree. Social distancing is the best way to go, because then that minimizes the risk, minimizes the exposure, and minimizes the chance of the spread, which at this point, until, as you said, until we really know more, which probably won't be until after they start doing some lessons learned. What could we have done? What should we have done? What did happen? What could have happened differently? Until they start getting into that, we're really not going to know.
We've seen some, you know, numbers and things like that. I think we posted on our social media recently sort of just a diagram of how they believe the exposure is happening. And, you know, that when you're in close proximity, you know, it becomes a math problem.
Yes,
you know, that
absolutely.
You expose so many people, they expose so many more. And you can see in several generations of contact with people, the numbers start to become real numbers and scary numbers.
Yeah.
You know, that's why the social distancing is so important, because it brings that initial spread number down, you know, a great amount.
Correct. Correct. And that's, you know, math may not be everybody's favorite subject, but the exponential factor, that should catch somebody's attention rather quickly. You know, when it doubles and doubles and doubles, that gets big rather quick.
It does. And, you know, it was something, like I said, we posted the other day, and it even kind of took me back, because I'm not a math major by any stretch of the imagination either. But you give me a visual that shows me mm-hmm. that, and it's like, all right, this makes sense. Okay. This
yes.
is math I understand. It's not that new math they're teaching my kids.
No. There's no funky equations there. It's straight multiplication rather rapidly.
Exactly.
Yeah. So in terms of the day-to-day operations, I'm assuming the patrol force has, to the extent possible, taking extra precautions when you answer a call.
Sure. So we've changed around a couple of different things. Medical calls, unless it's a life-saving sort of emergency type call, our officers may respond to the scene, but we don't necessarily go in and expose ourselves.
Right.
We wait for the paramedics. We're fortunate here in the community that we have a great fire department with a lot of really good people who are higher trained in these things and, you know, protective equipment than we are. So if there's not a need for us to rush in and help save lives, then if time's on our side, we're going to take advantage of time,
mm-hmm.
time and distance. That's really the key
sure.
factor for us.
Yeah.
So we've changed things around like that a little bit. The other thing that we've done is we've, you know, stopped responding in person to some citizen complaints. Things that, you know, could easily, just as easily be handled over the phone. You
okay.
know, with a phone call, a follow-up,
sure.
you know, our dispatch center down in Norfolk, the MEC, the regional dispatch center, you know, gets the initial information for what the call is. They have a protocol that, you know, sort of determines whether it's a call we need to actually send officers to, or whether it's something we can collect some information on, have an officer come back to the station, give the person a call, get all the information. If, you know, there's pictures or something we need to take and they can email them to us, we're, you know, we're not going to stop answering calls. We're not going to stop creating reports and doing investigations and things like that. We just may do them a little bit differently. And that may be, like we talked about a minute ago, one of those lessons learned going forward.
Yes.
You know, that we can change our operation a little bit, and it may actually be for the better. You know, the goal is always to serve the public as best we can. And we're finding that some of these things are working out rather well, you know.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that we're doing. We've, you know, restructured some of our staffing. Obviously, schools being out. Our community service officers, who also serve as our school resource officers in all of the schools in the community and Tri-County, they were reassigned back to patrol to beef up the patrol force.
Sure.
We've also reassigned most of our detectives back to patrol, back into uniform.
Okay.
So we've got that going on. So, I mean, these are sort of precautionary type things. We're not experiencing personnel losses yet. You know, and we hope we don't. We hope we keep everybody healthy.
No.
But we need to be, you know, agile and prepared in the event we do.
Correct.
And that's really what it's about. It's that pre-planning, you know, we're seeing some scary things coming down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure that we're in the best possible position we can be in for those.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when I talked with Brutus, the DPW director, he mentioned the same thing. Even the people who are doing the water readings and the sewer pump station readings, they've been segregated from the others so that they, on the one hand, can do what they need to do, but then they have less interaction with the others. So heaven forbid if something does happen to one of them. One, they've got some backup, and two, that individual at least has minimized exposure to the others as well.
Exactly. And we're trying to do the same sort of thing here. You know, officers are instructed, you know, at the beginning and end of all their shifts, they've got to wipe down their cruisers, you know,
mm-hmm.
sanitize their police cruisers, minimize contact within the building, you know, not all congregate for, you know, meetings. Even roll calls now are much shorter, or they're spread out more, you know, in larger areas or outside. Thankfully, you know, we've had some better days.
Some better weather, that helps, yes.
Exactly, you know, and we're taking those sort of precautions to just minimize that risk, because we can never eliminate risk. Unfortunately, in this business, you know, the police are always going to be needed. Some bad people are always going to do bad things, and we're going to be there and ready to deal with that and hold them
mm-hmm.
accountable. But we're going to minimize where we can.
Correct. And it's at times like this where clearly some of the nefarious folks think that they can take advantage of that, and that makes it an extra challenge too.
It does. You know, we're seeing, you know, I mean, a lot of online scams and things like that, you
mm-hmm.
know, and unfortunately some people will try to take advantage. We try to post as much information as we can on our social media sites, warning people of, you know, trends or things we're seeing or reports we're getting.
Right.
To keep them aware. We encourage them to check our Facebook site, our Twitter feed. You know, we'll put out as much as we can. That's another one of the struggles, though, right now. There's information overload for a lot of people.
Yes.
And it's very difficult to keep up with it because it changes every day. We're learning new things every day.
Right.
And it's difficult not only for the public, but it is for the officers as well.
I mean,
they're getting a lot of information thrown at them. It's hard to digest it. You know, and these are things that, you know, potentially could be really important to their health and safety, or the health and safety of their own families.
Agreed.
You know, so it's difficult for everybody, you know, as we all learn together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's where Chloe and my role is. Community Information Director, my self-appointed title, similar to your role, you're dealing on behalf of the department. So I'm dealing on behalf of the citizenry and now working with the radio and TV station to share the news. It can be overwhelming, and hopefully we try to kind of filter and send just the right stuff and the good stuff. But yeah, it is a challenge. There is so much out there for sure.
Yeah, and it's stressful. We've put out some things, you know, on how to deal with the stress. And one of the things is, you know, sort of limit your media intake and
mm-hmm.
make sure that when you do, you know, because you do want to stay informed, that you use reliable sources.
Absolutely.
You know, the CDC is obviously, you know, your go-to for what's going to be new or what the recommendations are and things like that. Those are organizations that you can trust. You know, some of the social media sites, we know it even before this, you know, virus came through. You can't always believe what you read on the internet or on Facebook or anything else. Yeah. Go to reliable sources, get the information firsthand if you can. You're always going to be better off and better informed that way.
Yeah. Even if it's your best friend on Facebook, that still may not be the most trusted source.
So. Yeah. Cause you don't know where they got their information from.
Yeah. So I deal as well with the CDC. I use the IRS, specifically with the health, the SSA, Social Security Administration, the Medicare stuff, Treasury Department, because of the new benefit checks coming, et cetera. Yeah. Using those trusted sources is the way to go for sure.
Absolutely. And you know that the town's done a really good job with using their website, you know, for getting information out, linking, you know, to direct sources, good information sources. They've been very proactive with it. You can find right on the main page of the franklinma.gov website, you know, in big, you know, red highlights, you know, click here for COVID-19 information. And they've done a really good job with, you know, putting up the important stuff, the stuff that we need to know about.
Absolutely.
Know, and if you have questions, you know, a good place to go to maybe get some of those questions answered.
Agreed. Yeah, one of my earlier discussions was with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and Anne-Marie Tracy, who's the news communication specialist covering the social media account. She was the one behind the new portals, both town side and school side. So there's a similarity look and feel, but yeah, the info behind it is accurate, and we certainly encourage folks to go there because that's the gospel.
Exactly. No, that's the way to go.
And you've had some time, or at least some officers had some time, to give a special birthday to one of our residents recently.
Yeah, that happened the other day there. It made social media, it made the news.
We shared it out.
Yeah, excellent. You know, we're not the first department to do it. It's happening a lot. This one just happened to get recorded and grab some traction on social media. It's one of those things that, you know, a lot of public safety agencies have done these sort of things for years when they can. It's a part about being engaged in the community and being helpful. It's not the first one we've done, you know. You never know what's going to sort of take off, and this one did, and that's great. It's wonderful. I love to see the good acts that we're doing get out there. I think that's a really, you know, important thing for us, you know, so that we humanize ourselves a little bit. And we can poke fun at ourselves a little bit too. I think that's part of it too. I think it helps us in the community relate to people better, to open up doors of communication and things like that. You know, and when we can do those things, we'll do them. Obviously, if public safety needs arise and we're needed somewhere else for, you know, something that, you know, demands our attention, then unfortunately we can't cover everything,
right?
You know, but we're going to prioritize, and obviously, you know, what we're trained for, what we're here for, will take priority. But if there's downtime or people available and those sort of things pop up, and they're only from time to time, you know, we try to do what we can.
Agreed. And I know you've been good about that historically. The Halloween party, I know, is a big event, and a lot of kids come away with smiling faces.
Yes, they do. And probably large dental bills, I would imagine.
So much sugar, really?
I know. We are definitely not funded by the American Dental Association.
Yeah. But it's good to see those kinds of public events. And hopefully, you know, with the warmer weather, you know, and with the right curve coming down, we'll get a better schedule as to, you know, what's going to happen. The Strawberry Festival certainly is another thing that people look forward to. And I think you have, I know the fire department has kind of an open house because they're nicely positioned to do that at that time. But I do recall there's certainly a good presence of your folks in and around on those whether it's the Strawberry Strolls, Harvest Festival, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of the downtown partnership events we try to, you know, be a part of, whether we're there for security reasons or I know the last Harvest Festival, they, you know, the officers actually had set up a booth with information and and things like that, doing some community outreach and, you know, those sorts of things. And that's all good stuff. I mean, that's, we're a big town, but we're not so big that we don't want to be in touch with our community and things like that. And we want to, you know people, and we want them to know us and recognize us and understand that we're approachable.
Agreed.
I think that's a key point.
And I think that that helps, because heaven forbid you have to go to a serious call. If you've already had a relationship with that, even if it's a child, that makes a whole lot of difference. Then you're
It absolutely does. I mean, when it comes to policing a community, it's a little bit of, you know, of a difference, you know, and some people have asked me this before, between like the role of the state police and when you see them on the highway. I mean, a lot of those, you know, troopers out there, you know, which who are doing a valiant job, they're going to interact with somebody one time and they're never going to see them again. You know, here in, you know, with local police departments, we are probably going to run into people, you know, several times, and developing a rapport or at least a mutual respect can go a long way in whether it's diffusing a volatile situation or gaining information that we need, you know, cooperation from the community. Those are the types of things that, you know, the buzzwords in the 90s and early 2000s was all about community policing. We don't hear as much about it today, but I think it's because it's just become ingrained. We don't need a title for it anymore. Right. It's just sort of how we function and how we interact with the community. It doesn't need its own separate thing. I mean, years ago, you probably remember we had the substation in the center of town for a little while, you know, and things like that, where we tried to be out in the community a little bit more, you know, storefront sort of thing. I mean, now we're encouraging our officers, and we have a lot of younger officers. We've hired, I think it's 19 officers in the last 3 years.
Right.
And it's a younger generation, and they're really good about it. I mean, I'm the social media coordinator, so when they go out and they do something, you know, whether it's they stop at a lemonade stand when, you know, those were going on, or they're doing something, you know, we want to highlight that because we are a part of the community. And we believe that we should be involved. And, you know, we want people to talk to us. We don't want them to be afraid of us. You know, we want them to know that we're here for them in an emergency, and we're here to talk to if they just got a problem or a question or, you know, whatever it is they need.
Indeed. A lot of good stuff. Well, I want to be mindful of your time, too. And while we've had a good conversation, we probably could, you know, spin the yarns a few more times, a few minutes longer anyway. Do you have any other particular items that you want to share while we've got some time?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that we're trying to get out there, and we're doing it ourselves too with different organizations that we're involved with, is we're really asking the community to look out for each other. The elderly, the sick, those with special needs, neighbors that, you know, may have had access to public services such as public transportation and things like that, that may have shut down, that are no longer functioning. Sure. Well, they still need, you know, food and supplies and medicine and things like that. And while we want them to obviously do it in a socially distant, responsible manner, you know, check in with your neighbors, you know, and things like that. If you run into the store, see if they need anything, you know, if they don't have those same abilities to move around themselves. We've partnered with the Franklin Food Pantry to help them out in any way that we can, you know, and that dialogue's been going back and forth, and we're building something there that I think is going to be, you know, really, really, really good for us, good for them, you know, and it's just another way that to stay engaged in the community. We know a lot of people are struggling right now, and the longer this goes on, the worse, you know, it could potentially get.
Absolutely.
You know, so as we build these, you know, new relationships, new partnerships and things like that, we want to make sure that, you know, we can sustain them too, you know, and be there for people that, you know, may not be having trouble right now, but, you know, there are things like food sustainability and, you know, things like that, that are going to become an issue the longer this goes on. And I, again, not being an expert in this, I can only go by what I read and what I see. You know, we don't have a real clear time frame, you know, and I think that's the hardest part for people and causes a lot of the anxiety, is the unknown.
Absolutely. Yeah. The uncertainty of the future, you know, goes back to an old term that we probably both recognize in terms of the FUD factor, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Because, with that flattening of the curve, And some people say, you know, things are going to be done by Easter. Well, clearly Easter is coming, and no, they're not done yet. But
yeah,
you know,
and
when,
we don't dictate this virus's course.
I mean, that's true. For
all intents and purposes, we're along for the ride. We take the advice of the experts, and you know, the hope, like you said, is to flatten that curve. And I hope people understand what that is. I know we've seen a million charts on TV and everything else, but you know, we know from what the scientists tell us that the virus is going to spread. But the key to the social distancing is we want to slow down the number of people that need that really hardcore, you know, medical care from all showing up at the hospital at the same time. That's what flattening the curve is.
Absolutely.
It's not about eliminating the virus. The virus is going to do what the virus does. It's about making sure that we have the resources available for those that need it when they need it. And, you know, if we can spread that out more, those people have a better, you know, chance of recovering and, you know, going on with their lives and the rest of us too. I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, there's no better time to be a good neighbor than right now. I mean, because we are truly all in this together.
We are. It goes back to that, the math we talked about at the beginning, you know, as staggering as that is, and that's where we need to maintain and flatten the curve. We need to get to that, you know, very minimal exposure, very minimal, what's the right term there, spread, in order to flatten the curve. Because, yeah, then if the department's yours and then the hospitals get overwhelmed, that then the right attention, and even for the other illnesses that are still happening, because life goes on.
Absolutely, it does. Yeah, there. I mean, people are still sick. People still have other things going on, and you know, we have to make sure that those medical resources, those emergency services, are available for everyone. I mean, it's difficult right now. I know a lot of people are struggling because allergy season is kicking up right now.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to jump to a conclusion that, oh no, I've got that virus because I've got the sniffles or something like that. So, you know, thankfully there's a lot of information out there on sort of how to do a self-check and how to sort of try to determine whether this is actually the virus or this is just, you know, seasonal allergies or you've got a cold or something like that, because those things haven't stopped. They're continuing to come.
Correct.
You know, and we don't want to overwhelm the emergency rooms with things that aren't emergencies. Obviously, you know, the main factors, if you're having, you know, chest pain because it's you have a cardiac condition, yes, you should absolutely go to the hospital. If you're having extreme difficulty breathing, yes, you should absolutely go to the hospital. Those are, you know, life sustaining sort of things. If those two things aren't happening, you have a problem, you know. But some of the other things, you know, we need to get people to understand that don't go to the worst fear right away. And there are other explanations for maybe what's going on with them. And, you know, thankfully the governor was good early on opening up portals to telemedicine and things like that. And not having to go to the doctor's office necessarily to interact with your physician. I give a lot of credit to the state. I thought our response here in the Commonwealth was measured and appropriate. And, you know, they didn't hesitate. You know, they made the resources available as soon as they, you know, recognized it. They changed legislation when it needed to be changed, you know, and they continue to give us guidance. We get new stuff every day, you know, and it's all, again, about, you know, getting through this together, keeping as many resources available as we can, you know, out there and, you know, concentrating on the people that need the help the most.
Well, thank you for taking time. Be mindful of your time and your coworkers' time to give you some time back. But I think we've got some good info to share with the community. So again, thank you very much for all you do and for your team and the work that they do helping us every day, not just during this pandemic.
Well, I thank you for that. And like I said, we're thankful of the community. They're very respectful of us and, you know, they're working with us. We're partners in this. You know, we're not a bunch of individuals, so we'll work through this, we'll get through this, and you know, there'll be brighter days ahead.
There will indeed.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends or neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.